You just tuned in to Set for Success with your host, Richard Lanham, but you knew that already. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to continue our journey to help you create a roadmap to change your business, career, or life. And we're going to do this through how? Chatting with one person at a time to uncover people's lives, their business, their journey, their successes, so you can create the success that you deserve. And you do deserve to be successful. You know what? I want you to say that right now. I deserve to be successful. Whether it's in your business, your career, or your personal life, we all deserve to be set for success. Heck, I wouldn't be doing this show if I didn't believe that to be true. Now, if you know anything about me, you'll tune in all the time. You know I love quotes. I'm one of these people, I get on the internet and I just pick a topic and I throw it in there and I'd see if I can find some interesting quotes for you. So here's the quote today. Without change, there is no innovation, creativity, or incentive for improvement. Those who initiate change will have a better opportunity to manage the change that is inevitable. And that's sort of cool words. Now, this quote is brought to you by William Pollard. Now, hopefully I have his last name correct, P-O-L-L-A-R-D. Now, William lived from about 1911 to 1989, and he was a physicist and a priest. He started his career as a professor of physics in 1936 at the University of Tennessee. And in 1946, he championed the organization of the Oak Ridge Institute of Nuclear Studies, where he was the director until 1974. Wow, that's absolutely incredible. He's also an author and co-author of a significant amount of material in the area of Christianity, science, and religion, found in books, chapters, journal articles. He is sometimes referred to as the Atomic Deacon. So that was sort of a fascinating thing. Now, I've never read any of his stuff before until the other day, but I started reading through some of his things on innovation and change and society and business. Fascinating, fascinating man, individual. So here we go. I think most people would agree with the following statement. We can always depend on change. Just think about it. Can you always depend on change? Sure. Now, I'm not talking about C-H-A-I-N. I'm talking about C-H-A-N-G-E, change, okay? Everything is moving forward all the time, from the Earth's rotation around the sun to humans rushing here and there to get stuff done. Change is a constant we can depend on, right? It's a given. That's what we mean by change is a constant. For our personal lives, we're working lives every day. We're changing, always moving forward. If you agree with those statements that changing or that we're always changing, where does innovation or creativity come into play? Albert Einstein once said, true sign of intelligence is not knowledge, but imagination. See, I gave you a double whammy there. Two quotes for one. With that thought in mind, I've been thinking about creativity and imagination must be part of the equation for innovation and to create change. If this is the case, we need to be innovating all the time in order to keep up with change, especially since change is something that we can depend on. It's a constant. Remember, we said it's a given. The complex world or business world often focuses on something, and one area of focus is innovation. There is a need to develop and deliver sustainable and measurable results to improve efficiency through developing people, resources, capabilities to innovate and transform business. Heck, transform people's lives for that matter. It's almost like a do or die situation, which is also another very interesting quote. Tom Petty talked about that. So what do you do here? Or what do you say? Well, there's lots of words. Change, creativity, imagination, innovation, transformation. All words I love. But there are also words, I guess, that beckon a question. I always, when I listen to words, I often think, okay, which came first, the chicken or the egg? You decide. Okay, so here's what we're going to do today. As I was thinking about today's show, I wondered who could share their business and life journey with us. Someone who knows something about the consulting industry, planning, change, and innovation, probably because of the work they've been doing throughout their whole lives. They say timing is everything. As luck would have it, a business associate of mine, Sandra Foster, was available to come and chat with us today. Now, Sandra is the managing partner of the Capstone Ridge Group. We're going to talk a little bit about that. Sandra, welcome to Set for Success today.
Great to be here.
I'm glad you're here, actually. You know, I've been trying to get you on the show for a while. It's been like probably 2 years, but you have an incredibly busy schedule.
I do.
You do. Basically, could you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Well, I usually describe myself as an entrepreneur. I've done many different things in my life journey. Mm-hmm. Worked for very large organizations in the early part of my career, and then did some startup work. And then became an independent consultant, and then came back into more of a entrepreneurial startup here in Winnipeg.
Yeah, I was looking at your LinkedIn profile, and that's sort of what I've seen, actually, that you've had this incredible career arc where you've worked in everything from, I think, marketing. You'd have to tell me. Give us a little bit of rundown, a little bit more detail of your career arc, because you've had some very interesting titles in your career.
Well, I started off in business school. I'm a born and raised Saskatchewan girl, so unfortunately I cheer for the Riders. Sorry about
that. Okay, that's all right. We'll forgive you.
graduated and knew that I wanted the computer industry because that was where, you know, change and innovation and excitement was going to come. Started in a sales role based in Calgary. That career took me from Calgary to Toronto to Regina to Winnipeg. So all the reasons I moved to city was with one company who was growing and changing very quickly.
So basically your whole career has been around change and innovation.
Absolutely.
Just by the nature. Yeah. You and I share that in common, actually. And I don't know, time frame, because I graduated from the University of Manitoba, and then I ended up in the consulting industry, which I absolutely love. I spent 30 years there. But I also built, I often say to people, I built my career on the back of technology,
yeah,
right? Or the technology industry. And some people look at me and they say, well, gee, you fixed computers. Actually, I didn't fix computers, right? I did a lot of stuff around there. I ran a lot of teams and made a lot sure that a lot of stuff got integrated and innovated. And it sounds to me like very much the same thing for you. Your life has been around partly the technology industry, which has generated change or innovation within organizations.
Well, it started there, but then while I was in the technology organization and it was going through some need for transformation, and it eventually did not survive, I put myself on a massive, in the day we called it re-engineering project.
That's right, re-engineering projects, yeah.
And I was a subject matter expert because I was trying to help how we dealt with our customers, help innovate and change our customer engagement methods. And I learned a lot from that, and I just love that. And I thought, I don't really want to do what I used to do. I want to go help people change things and innovate. And so after that, I became associated with a group of people who were very kind of global gurus in what we called at the time business process renewal, because reengineering wasn't, that was really a euphemism for downsizing.
Yes.
So renewal meant let's really look at what people do
and
what they're trying to achieve. Mostly start, what are we trying to achieve?
Yeah.
And let's look at what people do and make it more efficient, effective, and adaptable, because change was always going to need to be happening.
And that's an amazing piece right there, because I love the fact that you use the idea of re-engineering, and you and I have got a very similar, what I call career arc, right? Because all these words you're using, I have lived, okay? But then, talking about renewal, I mean, I went through that phase too, where we were talking more about renewal, and then starting to step back and say, okay, what exactly do people do? Right. And what are they involved in? And then how can we construct something from there? And that's what I hear you say.
Yes.
Yeah. You know what? When we come back, I think what we'll do is we'll take a short break. When we come back, I think, Sandra, you should share us a little bit more about your insight and how organizations change. We'll be right back. Hello and welcome back. I am hanging out today with my new best friend, Sandra Foster. Is it Foster? Do we get the name right? Yeah, I want to make sure. Okay.
It is.
I like to double check, right? So before the break, we were talking a little bit about really some cool words, right? Re-engineering, renewal, and then we started closing off about change. And one of the things I'm really curious about, from your perspective, how do you and your organization define change?
Well, I guess I would say change should always be starting with why.
Yeah.
There's something, we're trying to achieve something. We're trying to move the dial. We're trying to make something better, ideally. Mm-hmm. We don't just change for change's sake. So it could involve anything. It could be broad in scope. It could be very small in scope. But it should be making something better.
Making something
better. For those
better.
who receive your services or are part of what you're trying to do in the world.
So it could be anything from a customer to a target to employees to, change is, inevitable. Now, you mentioned a very interesting thing. You talked about the why, and I suspect there's actually something, because you focus more on a business-to-business space, correct? Do I have that correct?
Correct.
Yeah. So basically, there's something about performance in there. Could you explain to us that a little bit?
Well, I guess most performance in organizations is a function of you want to do things. Well, the old saying used to be cheaper, faster, better.
Cheaper, faster, better. I don't know if that's the case anymore, but anyway, go ahead.
Well, you were trying to, serve customers better, gain loyalty. You were hoping to do it in less time, at lower costs. and continuously make it better.
Make it better. Yeah, that sort of increased productivity type thing. Mm-hmm. Interesting point in there, because I often, like yourself, we both are involved not only in the consulting profession, but we do training and speaking and stuff too. So we're dealing with a lot of audiences. And I find the equation of decreased cost, increased productivity, increase my sales, and increase my revenue to be one of those things that, you know what, they don't play nicely in the sandbox together. And I think often when we talk about change, organizations think they do, right? Mm-hmm. And they say, well, you know what, if we do all of this stuff, we're going to be a lot better. But I've worked with a lot of organizations. I'd love to hear your thoughts on this one, where they've said, okay, we need to bring down our costs. We want to get far more improvement out of our organization. By the way, we just hired 10 more salespeople. I'm exaggerating a little bit. And we're going to increase our sales, and they expect their revenue to go up. When I'm talking about bottom line, right, to increase, their top line might go up, but their productivity actually goes down. Their costs end up going up because they just suddenly generated a lot more business, and they do not have the infrastructure in place to handle it. Have you ever experienced that before in your career?
Well, I think there's never absolutes. You know, when you look at performance, it should be as a function of something. So,
yes.
You know, cost per gross profit per person.
Yes.
Right? So take it, if you did add 20 more people, have you moved the dial related to gross profit per person?
Yeah, and that's
as opposed to the raw absolutes.
Yeah, the raw absolute number or what you're expecting to receive. See, that's an interesting measurement right there in itself, because that's a KPI, key performance indicator, gross profit per person. And I wonder how many organizations actually use that as their measurement. Do they sit down and figure out exactly what their gross profit per person is, as opposed to just what the gross profit of the organization is overall? Does it make sense to use that as a measurement out of curiosity?
You know, I think that you've got to first start thinking gross profit before you could get it per person. But I was more tying back to your example of we're trying to reduce costs.
Yeah.
We're trying to increase sales. And we need to do both of those things, because that's what we're going to need to succeed in the marketplace. So how would we know whether we're moving the dial? You know, how are we know that we're making it better? You know, look at some measurement of each aspect and then try to get some ratios that would make sense.
Yeah, and that's a very interesting point too, because you and I both work business to business. And I just had this conversation. I was actually on holidays putting together a proposal. My wife was so happy. but I was having a discussion with a client that I was going to work with. And when we got down to their financials in the proposal, I started asking about the analysis of their financials, because I often require a 3 years at least financials. And then we do a current state performance review, and then we do a future state review. And these are just the high level numbers. What I find absolutely fascinating is how many organizations, they don't know their KPIs. Mm-hmm. Like, they have no idea what their numbers are. Or if they do know them, only two or three people know them. And the people that do the work have no idea what they're being measured on. And I often find that, how do you move yourself forward without actually understanding what your numbers are? And the statement I use with clients, and maybe you may use something similar, is that if you don't know your numbers, you don't know your business. Mm-hmm. And that's throughout the whole organization. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, I would agree from my building expectations for everybody in terms of their performance and how it aligns with where the organization needs to go. So I think there is there's key performance indicators that can be taken, especially to the management level. And then there might be, you know, objectives and key results that get taken to the individual level. So you create alignment. What are our priorities for this period of time? You know, this month, this quarter, to make sure that we get to where we want to go. But it's aligned and organized, as opposed to just random measures that get printed off and no one knows what they mean, and that they don't have any ability to influence them.
Yeah, one of the my favorite quotes that a vice president of an organization once said to me, vice president of operations, we were sitting down having lunch, and he said, you know, Richard, we have lots of numbers. We just don't know what to do with them or what they mean. And that just told me so much about the organization, is that they were pumping out a lot of data. They just didn't know what
to
do with it.
Meant.
Yeah, didn't know what it meant. And it also told me they had too much data, like the business intelligence, right? They sort of, it's amazing what clients will actually tell you. And if you come from it from a consultant's perspective, where you spent, I don't know how many years you've been in the consulting industry, that you wanted 30?
And I started when I was 12, yes.
When you started when you were 12? Okay. I'm just guessing, right? I had 25, 30 years. Based on reviewing your thing, it's amazing how, you know, people don't understand their business, and yet they've been working in it all their lives. It's just, I find that a real challenge. Basically, if we look at it a little bit further, maybe we can touch on this. What is the silver bullet solution?
Well, there is no silver bullet.
Awesome.
we used to call it, airplane inspiration. Somebody read an article in a magazine and thought that, here's the new technology idea and it was going to be the silver bullet and everything would change. But that has never come to pass in all my years in the surrounding the technology industry. It's always a matter of a very thoughtful, integrated approach to saying we're going to take technology, we're going to change what human beings do, and we're going to have to make sure that the work that they do and how they get engaged, it all ties together.
Okay. So I think what we'll do is we'll take a short break. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about the silver bullet solution, that it doesn't exist, and really, what are the options? So if you stay tuned in, Sandra's going to explain to us basically some of the choices that organizations can make to be far more innovative and effective. Hello and welcome back. I'm hanging out today with Sandra Foster, and we were just talking a little bit about the silver bullet solution. That's the way I'm going to put it down, right? The whole idea that you can solve everything right away. And I think what we were saying, Sandra, just before the break, that's not really a possibility, that the idea that there's one solution fits all. I might be putting words into your mouth, so I need you to step in with this. But the idea that there's a silver bullet solution for an organization, that's maybe a bit of a fallacy. Is that where we were sort of sitting with?
Well, that's certainly my belief.
That's your belief, yeah. Mm-hmm. So basically when it comes down to things like change, in which we were talking about before, what are some of the things an organization should look at a little bit further in terms of creating change within the organization?
Well, I think that what it has to start with is why.
Okay.
Why are we changing?
Yeah, and that's what we talked about that in the last segment a little bit, the sort of the why we're changing. If we are moving through a little bit further then, and with change, and you've actually identified the change that's required, what are some of the key challenges that companies or businesses that you've worked with actually experience when they're going through change? Or they've identified the why, they've identified their measurements, which, they've identified that we can't just do one size fits all solution, which, the enterprise sort of approach. What are some of the challenges that organizations go through?
Well, I think, first of all, they don't identify the why.
They identify the what.
First,
the what high.
And we get caught up in that. So sometimes having that, we call it a North Star to say, where are we trying to go? And of all the different ways we might get there, and we may not, there's rarely a straight line. It's going to be a zigzag to head forward. Of the different options that we have, what's the best path? Mm. And then we can always pivot and go another direction. But it's having that sense of where we're going, knowing it's not going to be a straight path, and then coming up with a plan for change that involves whatever needs to change. Mm. Whether it's you're going to leverage new technology and change people's work and maybe change people's roles and give them new skills and abilities, maybe whole things that people used to do go away.
Yeah.
So the human dynamic in that change is really, really an important element of understanding where we are today, where we want to be, and how do we get people on the bus and helping drive the change.
Now, with your organization, are you really focusing more on change through technology, or are you looking more at change overall? Because you've got quite the consulting practice, right? So there's lots of services that you guys offer. Maybe that's a good spot to start. Maybe to the tie-in, the important work that you guys have been doing with the whole idea of innovation and change. How would you respond to that? What is the kind of things you guys are involved in?
Well, certainly in our current journey here in Winnipeg,
yes,
a lot of it has to do with taking advantage of the world, the digital world.
The right? digital world. Okay.
Yeah. So the Gartner Group had to give us a new term. We now have digitalization.
Digitalization. Okay. Okay. Fair enough.
It's not a word, but it is now.
Yeah, it is now in the popular dictionary.
And certainly, if you look to the gig economy and you look to organizations that do not have the traditional structure that are growing and scaling very, very quickly through innovative use of technologies, skip the dishes, now 2,000 people.
I know, isn't that amazing?
And yeah. They were 15.
And Bold Technology is now looking at hiring 200 people, I think it is the number. So, and two examples of companies that are head officed in Manitoba that are technology driven, that are scalable and expanding exponentially.
Yeah.
And because
I think that there's a lot of a need for inspiration. You know, as you're going through change, people have to have a sense of what's possible. So sometimes we have to look outside our industry, look to, you know, be inspired by things that are a lot like what we do, but done in another industry segment, or look to the new economies and say, how do we take advantage of the fundamentals of what they're doing in our business?
Now, you've used this word a couple of times already, the new economies. I love it, because back in the day when I studied economics, again, at the University of Manitoba, my sort of first degree, I had a book to read that was called The New Economy, right? So now you go 30 years forward, right? Now we're talking about the new economy again, right? Yeah. So I just love it how, you know, stuff from old is new and all this stuff. But how are you defining, what do you mean when you say the new economy? What comes to mind for you in your professional practice and the people you're working with these days?
Well, I think the new economies are heavily taking advantage of of technology, for sure. They are, looking at industry norms and saying why. And the term we love to use, disintermediating. Cutting out the middle person.
Disintermediating.
Why? Yeah. Why do we need these roles in the middle that used to be part of a, you know, old supply chain of coming to the market? And that, if you think of a lot of traditional organizations, you know, they look at making, you know, change within a year time frame. You go to Skip the Dishes or Bold, they're changing in a weekly time frame.
Yeah.
And lots of moving parts that can all hang together. You know, I've taken people tours around Skip and showed them what they do, and they're in awe. And 2,000 people and one printer.
Yeah.
And the only reason it's there is because, you know, CRA and banks still are paper-based.
It's the same, you know, it's interesting you would say that, because I was working with a client very similar, but it was a fax machine. And they had, and I was working with them, and I said, okay, why do you have a fax machine? Well, they have one of their areas, the clients that they work with, still uses faxes. So they have to have one fax machine that the whole company, like 2,000 people, can use in order to be able to work with this one client, right? So they have to keep one. Other than that, it's an obsolete technology.
Absolutely.
You know, and you got the same thing with printers. I, too, have actually had a tour at Skip the Dishes, and I was fascinated by their financial department, because it was, at the time, now I haven't been there in a year and a half, but at the time, it was two or three people sort of in the backside wall, open office, that handled all of the accounting and everything along this line. So you've seen it, too.
Oh, yeah.
No printers. Right?
There's one and it's hidden.
It's one and it's hidden. And it's the same thing with a whole other people. I see the same thing too. I have the privilege of working with international students, right? A couple of programs I do with Canadian Business Fundamentals, Strategic Planning. You know this about me. Business Analysis Fundamentals, a few. And I get a lot of people that are now in that sort of 22 to 32 age frame. And these participants, they're not using printers. When they're working together, they're not using the big M technology, big MS, if you want to know who that is. They're using the big G technology.
Absolutely.
And I'm not saying names. They're just letters of, right? And they're using all the free software, right? And they're working collaboratively, right? So where they are is irrelevant. They're all working together.
Yeah.
Isn't that a fascinating and amazing transition? And I think that's sort of what you're talking a little bit about in terms of the new economy. It's the ability, you tell me, it's the ability to use technology to work from anywhere, but still be part of a larger organization.
But also just not automating traditional functions. It is using technology to collaborate, to communicate, to share, to come up with project plans. And as you say, a lot of the tools that some of these fast-growing companies use are not expensive. They're available. They're shareware, and eventually, over time, you know, as security and concerns, there is a need to perhaps replace with something that's built and has some other wrappers around it. But it's fascinating how when you don't have any view of constraints, that you can innovate and change and grow with that 11,000% in 3 years.
And you can have, I know, I agree with you. I mean, you and I are both on the same page. I've making the transition from certain tools. Like one of the things I was doing, I've taken a little bit of a break, right? I was doing a lot of videos and stuff, and I've taken a little bit of a break. But people ask me about, well, you know, how much do you spend on your video editing software? $35, right?
Yeah.
And it turns out that I was working with a group of 20-somethings, and they looked and said, oh, we use that software too. It's perfect. We don't need to buy this $1,000 or $2,000 piece of software. This does everything we need. And in today's world, you can do that.
But it's the balancing act. In large organizations, they do have some constraints, and they do have a lot of concerns, you know, security concerns and cyber risks are real.
Yeah.
So it's somehow finding the balance, breaking it down into some pieces that the larger organizations can take and be innovative. So you're not going to do it end to end from the beginning, but you need to have that vision for what it might look like and then start going after it. And start asking, you know, finding the old saying, we say, find the sacred cows. Well, we do it this way because we always did. Why?
How else could we do it?
Why and how else?
So what we'll do is we'll take a short break and we'll talk about, you know, why do you always do it that way? And how can you change? This is Richard Land for Set for Success. We'll be right back. Hello, everyone. Welcome back. You know we're at Set for Success. I'm hanging out today with Sandra Foster, and we've been talking about change and innovation. And we didn't use the word disruption. Used another word, which Sandra, I thought was absolutely fascinating. Also, digitalization was another cool word. But just before a break, we were talking about sacred cows. And I just love the expression. You made me smile. I'm going to start laughing on air here. But during the break, you made reference to a book or something. Could you tell me a little bit about that book?
Oh, Richard, the sad part is it was a book from the 90s.
It was called
Sacred Cows Make the Best Burgers.
Sacred Cows Make the Best Burgers. Do you recall the author's name by any chance?
No, I'd have to. It's on my shelf, but it's not popping. But I'm sure hopefully it's still in print. But the whole concept was to say, you know, sometimes the reason we continue to focus on the what we do is we think, you know, the computer industry, we thought we were in the computer business. We were building hardware.
Yeah.
And a lot of our companies didn't survive. They were, you know, the Apples of the world came along and they weren't in the computer business. They weren't in what they did. And they made great, fabulous, funky computers. But the why they did it, how Apple really grew, was really determining why we exist.
Yeah.
They're breaking the norms. They were breaking the status quo. There was no constraints about the what.
Yeah.
So, I'm sure a lot of people have seen the art, some of the press about people not wanting to give up the Mac and the Lisa and the different stories. But
that's loyalty.
The visionary was saying, we have to find new things. This is about our customers and making things better for them. Yeah. And making, you know, the iPod came from watching his daughter with her with her tapes and her inability to listen to music easily. He said, someday I'm going to put 2,000 songs on a little device.
Yeah, and that's right. I think from the movie or something or then from somebody's biographies and that. But that whole idea that, you know, why be constrained, right?
Right.
You know, and the interesting thing you mentioned too, and I remember this from the latter part of the 90s in working with different organizations, is that we would actually ask the question what business we were in, you know? And when we started, and we would keep asking, what business are we in? What business? And, you know, it was very interesting. I remember being in boardrooms where we were asking that question, and the question kept getting repeated and repeated and repeated until literally it was distilled down to like a core thing. Mm-hmm. And when you got it down to the core thing, and then, you know, why you're in that business, or, you know, it was fascinating to see what the answers would actually be, because people suddenly started to realize that the business that they thought they were in and the business they were actually in was very different. It's like the McDonald's story.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people often will say, well, McDonald's is in the restaurant business. Well, the real wealth of McDonald's, if you check out the documentary on it, is that they realized that they were in the real estate business, not the restaurant business.
Right.
And that's how they made their money, you know. So it's fascinating when you start to look at why and what and all of those questions and then starting to figure out the responses. That's sort of where I wanted to go with that. You mentioned the word, I guess we were talking a little bit about the gig economy. You mentioned that a lot more too. And the other piece I'm sort of interested in, and I don't know if you have any thoughts on artificial intelligence. I'm not, you know, I was looking at your website and everything, but when I hear the gig economy, and then I hear about the new economy, and then I look about business intelligence, then artificial intelligence comes in there too. And have you been reading any literature out of curiosity? And you're smiling at me. So do you have some thoughts on artificial intelligence at all?
Well, I mean, artificial intelligence was going to change the world when I first joined the computer industry.
Okay.
So I'm still waiting for it. But now it is to the point where we do have technology, we do have data and information, and we can, anything that has a decision to be made, something that's, you know, relatively black and white, can be automated. And now we can teach computers to learn.
Yes.
And they will become smarter, and they will be able to make decisions faster. And we will see traditional roles that were very, very, I would say, repetitive in nature are going to be automated.
And we've already seen that in the manufacturing industry. What I find fascinating, I actually wrote a blog about this, I don't know, maybe it was a year ago, a year and a half ago, is the change in the professional world, right? Where in the professional world, items that could be repeated can be automated. We've seen it in the travel industry, for example. It's a great example of where technology, business intelligence, and artificial intelligence is being used. But then you can now see it in the professional world too, where it's no longer to be sort of operational in the way you think and do, or tactical, but you need to be a little bit more strategic. And that's what I'm seeing.
I was kind of mixing robotic process automation with artificial intelligence. They're two different things.
Yeah.
Robotic process automation is really just taking that next round of tasks that are in between what computers have already automated and adding technology to make those things end-to-end faster. And that's a very popular thing to do. But I think the real artificial intelligence, the real benefit of that will be exploring new ways of solving problems in ways that we can't do today.
Yeah.
Looking at Watson and your ability to just faster combine all kinds of sources of input to make better decisions. So I think the opportunity with artificial intelligence will be making better decisions, and we're going to just have to be smart about what the scope of those decisions are.
Yeah,
those will be social decisions we have to make.
Yeah, and I think that's probably this can be very philosophical really quickly, because it brings into a lot of things. We talk about social responsibility, social decisions versus business decisions, which should be social decisions, but necessarily not always, right? There's sometimes straight number decisions. So it brings in a lot of fundamental questioning about where we're actually going to go when it comes to change and innovation and people resources. So this is the other piece I want to sort of touch on, because you talked about the gig economy, which the gig economy to me is really a skill / people resource issue. I prefer the word opportunity, and I don't know where your thoughts are in terms of the gig economy. I love the gig economy. I've always been involved in the gig economy. So to me, it's nothing new, right?
No.
I've 30 years in the consulting industry. I come from an entrepreneurial family. To me, it's nothing new. But for a lot of people, there's this big change and transition and innovation going on that they're talking about gig economy. So to me, it's always existed. It's just now you got the technology, right?
Well, it's easier to tie all the pieces together.
Okay,
right?
That's
so
a good way of putting it.
There's always been independent ways of doing things. Now you can take talent resources and combine them to solve a problem.
Yeah.
So to me, and you could do it by not having to, drive downtown and sit in a seat and do a job. You can do it virtually. You can do it 24/7 all the way around the world. I worked with business owners for many, many years that, they're a 24/7 operation, because when North America stops...
they keep
Europe
going.
Starting, right?
Yeah, when I was with PricewaterhouseCoopers, we used to run 8-hour teams, and they were global teams. Mm-hmm. So this was one project that we were involved in. And it would, I think that one of the hubs was Edmonton, if I remember correctly. So 8 hours there, and when they ended their day, another team would take over somewhere else in the world. Yeah. When they ended their day, another team would take over somewhere else. So it was a 24-hour day, and you were always moving through, and you had these connection meetings and stuff. But at that point in time, you had all the technology internally integrated, right? And you could be involved. Mm-hmm. Today is not that way anymore. I mean,
today we're relying on lots of external service providers to give us the ability to connect people, collaborate, do great things for whatever our market quest is,
and away
and
you go.
do it faster and better.
Sandra, what a great show I've been having. Okay, I've been awesome, awesome guests. I got two questions for you. The first one is really, if in about like 10 seconds or so, if you could give a final thought to our listeners, what would it be?
Well, I would say that we shouldn't be scared of innovation and change. It's just, it's so exciting, all of the potential.
And
breaking it down into pieces, focusing on the why, engaging people. Don't think of technology as a silver bullet, and really look at the work that the people do in concert with the technology and make that people, process, technology triangle always tie together and move forward to achieve whatever better results you want.
Mm. If somebody wanted to get in touch with you, how would they go about doing it?
It would be my email,
okay,
which is sandra.foster@capstoneridge.com.
Okay, sandra.foster@capstoneridge.com. Thank you, Sandra. I really appreciate you taking the time out of your very busy schedule to join me today. I know you're a managing partner with Capstone Ridge Company. Hopefully I got the name correct for you. And so I do appreciate you taking your time out of your schedule. As for our listeners, you know I appreciate it when you tune into the show, whether it is on the radio or on my podcast. Awesome. Always appreciate it. If you have a thought, an idea, a question, just email me at setforsuccess, richard@setforsuccess.ca. And I want you to remember something. Do your best, invest in the success of others, and make your journey count.